We're talking about indoor pest control on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Pests, they pose a problem no matter where we call home. According to the U.S. Census Bureau, querying about rodents in the American Housing Survey, about 2.9 million people reported sightings of both roaches and rodents in their homes in the 2019 survey. Join in on roaches, on ants, fleas, pantry pests, other infestations you're dealing with, 800-642-1234. Jeff Bourne is treasurer of the Wisconsin Pest Control Association, owns Bourne Pest Solutions in Waukesha. Jeff, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. Well, here we are heading into summer already. What are some of the common pests you see this time of year? What do we need to keep an eye on?
Well, yeah, it's broken just in the past couple of weeks. It seemed to move from winter right into summer here in Wisconsin. And there are definitely all sorts of pests everywhere because everything is up and active and wanting to get back out there to feed and to breed. And yeah, there are many pests around. I think probably the most typical call that we're getting right now is going to be for ants and a lot of stinging insect activity so far this summer, or this spring rather.
Where do the ants like to get into homes?
Ants are small and they are persistent foragers. So you have, you know, there can be different types of ants will have different colonies and they can be, you know, located. A field ant might be building a mound nest in your lawn. I think a lot of people would typically see something like that. You can have carpenter ants that would be located in dead wood around your house, but they could also be living somewhere in a dead spot in a live tree. So it's important to remember that carpenter ants can be not only in dead things around the house, but also in very large live trees. We find them very often. And then you can get something as small as a small little black ant or a pavement ant that people also, I'm sure, are very familiar with. They live right under a slab of concrete, maybe the stoop outside of one of your doors or a patio or a sidewalk leading up to your house. Those are all typical spots. So they can be in very many different areas. And since they are smaller bugs, it's not difficult for them to find a way to get into your house. I always like to tell people that, you know, your house is not designed to be airtight. It is supposed to breathe a little so that you don't have moisture and air issues indoors. And just those little spaces are always going to be enough for these small crawling bugs to find a way in.
And these small crawling bugs, they seize on that, you know, minute Cheeto on the floor. It's so tiny, and yet they find it. Are they after the Are they after the food? Are they after the water? What is it, you know, that's going on in the kitchen?
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah, you're correct. You know, it's a small bug. So even that small piece of Cheeto debris is a very large piece of food for such a tiny organism. So, and who doesn't like Cheetos? You know, ants in an ant colony, they're typically going after one of two types of food. It's either going to be some sort of carbohydrate or some sort of protein. And it can be different for the same colony at different times of the year as well. So a lot of times think of like those starchy, sugary things might be an attractant. Other times it could be more of like the meat or grease around your stove that would be an attractant. But all those things that are our food source is also going to be the food source for the ants. So keeping a clean environment indoors and reducing those odors that can attract them in the first place does a lot to prevent them from, you know, breaching that perimeter and coming inside.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I just follow my kids around when they have one of those chip bags in their hands. I mean, it's you just follow the scraps. But, you know, as you look at how we can do some preventative control, I mean, obviously keeping cleaner surfaces, cleaner floors, and really staying on top of that. But once there are some of those ants, it's really hard to get rid of them. What are some good solutions, you know, initial solutions before, you know, breaking out chemicals?
Yeah, for sure. You know, like starting with the outside of your home in the spring, since these are one of the first pests that pop up in the spring, you know, working on environment modification on the exterior of your property is going to be your first line of defense. So when we were speaking, for instance, about carpenter ants, and one of the things that they might be attracted to is dead or soft wood around the house, and soft because of moisture damage or because it's dead, you know, is something as simple as maintaining a clean outside environment, like picking up the sticks in the springtime, going around and eliminating, doing brush trimming and things like that, so that there aren't dead pieces of wood around that could attract them. And then it could be something as simple as keeping a space between the plants that you have surrounding your house. I love flowers, and we have flowers and lots of peonies, all these flowers that have these, big, beautiful bulbs that are about to burst. You know, they are secreting these juices that many different ants are going to be attracted to. So it's even something as simple as, like, for instance, I'm violating this rule right now. My peonies are growing huge and they are touching the outside of my house walls. And so I'm in many ways just inviting ants that are going to be attracted to the bulbs of these plants right up to my house. And I shouldn't be doing that. And other people could be keeping that in mind as well. Just having even something as small as an 18-inch barrier between the footing of your house and where the plants are growing can create enough space where it's going to be less likely that these ants are going to be, trying to get into your house, and just being happy with the plants and the outside environment.
So really, working from the outside in, it sounds like, in order to do some of that best control. Talking about pest control with Jeff Bourne, he's treasurer of the State Pest Control Association. Getting at all your questions, 800-642-1234, whether you're dealing with ants or fruit flies, gnats, spiders. We want to hear from you on what types of infestations you've tried to deal with and where you head next with it. 800-642-1234. Clara, producer, said using a water and vinegar solution to shoo away ants has really worked for Clara. Are there some natural remedies that we should try first?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There are many different types of green products, and these are things that can be purchased online. Amazon is so popular with so many people. At the big box stores, you can find them. And a lot of pest control companies have this green arsenal in their toolkit as well. So that is definitely an option. And most of these green products are going to be using, instead of some sort of synthetic pesticide, a natural oil that actually comes from a plant. So it could be, I was just looking at some labels this morning, rosemary oil, thyme oil, cedar oil, garlic oil. All these different things do have some pesticidal qualities to them. And that is a method of, doing a more of a green solution or an environmental friendly solution. And a lot of times it's just, the green products may not be quite as effective or as quick at the effectiveness as some of the synthetic pesticides available. And it's just going to require a little bit more persistence on the homeowner's part to be, making sure that they're getting out there right away in spring and then following up maybe the next week and taking a look around the yard and doing more targeted applications with these green products. So a little bit more labor intensive, but if the goal is to get rid of the pests and be environmentally friendly, that's definitely something that's attainable nowadays.
When is it time to really seek out a professional when the ants have started to win indoors? I mean, when is that turning point? I would imagine that turning point's different for everyone.
Well, you're exactly right. Everyone has their own personal threshold of what they're comfortable with as far as pests, getting inside. And certainly if you've tried some of the green or environmental friendly solutions and you're just not getting the results that you want, that's when you can start thinking about, calling a professional company and trying more of the synthetic type pest control. And with ants, fortunately, there's a lot of baits on the market. And that's another, it's not a green product, but it's a very environmentally friendly way, as opposed to making an application with a liquid pesticide everywhere. Doing targeted application of different baits is very environmentally friendly to still get rid of the problem at hand.
We have Jeff Bourne with us on pest control management in our living spaces, owns a pest control business in Waukesha. Bring on your questions for controlling the ants, the stink bugs, reducing the use of chemical applications, your go-to tips and tricks. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Jeff Bourne here on the Ideas Network. We're getting tips on controlling pests in our home on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The ants and the very aggressive gnats, are they fruit flies? It's really hard for me to tell the difference. But anyway, they try to infiltrate the food scraps bin under this kitchen sink that's destined for the compost bin. Try our best to keep it tight. They always manage to find a way in. Join in on what you have trouble in with the summer months. Conversation, 800-642-1234. Jeff Bourne, treasurer of the Wisconsin Pest Control Association, with us for the hour. So, Jeff, are they gnats or are they fruit flies that when you open the lid, they just swarm out?
Yeah, that's probably a fruit fly that you're referring to. But, you know, that's the popular colloquial term is gnat. You know, so people use gnat to describe many different small flies. And as a pest control operator, we would know that term gnat, we would still need to do some hunting around to verify exactly what was going on. And then the particular type of small fly that a person would be dealing with would help us hone in on what's the solution to get rid of that type of fly. But yeah, you're probably referring to what's either going to be called the little red fruit fly or the black fruit fly, two different species of fruit flies that are the most common. And they're each going to be feeding on some sort of decomposing organic matter. The little red fruit fly, more of the fresh fruit, you know, around a pile of bananas that you might have sitting on your counter. And black fruit fly, often like a rotting potato or onion that you might have forgotten about in a cabinet.
Yes. So as we get to solutions here on fruit flies, let's go to Tim in Madison. Tim, hi, go ahead.
Hi, I'm curious about how, I'm going to butcher this name, Diomaceous Earth works. Is that a good anti-bug thing to use? And I have a trash compactor. I work in an apartment complex, and I have massive fruit flies by it. How can I get rid of them or at least knock them down?
Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, the diatomaceous earth, I believe that's a desiccant. And what that is it's a green product. I believe it's considered one of those. So what it's doing is it's actually cutting the bug's body up as it crawls over the diatomaceous earth. And then it ends up just losing moisture in its body and dying that way. So it is effective. We use it in our company. I think all pest control companies find a use for that particular product in their toolkit. And then also, I believe that gardeners use it, that it's labeled even for outside use around plants. However, you want to double check that because I haven't used it that way myself. But it certainly is an effective tool as long as you're using it wisely. The thing that I always like to tell people is you don't want to be breathing this. You know, it's a finer dust. So you want to be careful in the areas where you're applying it so that if the dust gets kicked up, that you don't have people or pets that might be inhaling those particulate matters from the dust. So just be careful with it and make sure that you're reading the label on every product that you're purchasing, Tim, to make sure that you're following the label and applying it correctly. And then as far as the trash compactor room, sanitation is always the first thing we recommend and think about, but that is probably not realistic in a trash compactor room. There are different types of little strips. I'm thinking of something over the counter. I think you can buy the Hot Shot No Pest Strip. So that's going to be kind of like a small sponge that's impregnated with a chemical called dichlorvos. So write that word down, Hot Shot Pest Strip. You should be able to find it at Menards or Home Depot. And that would be great at long-term control in a trash compactor environment. However, remember that this small sponge that's impregnated with this chemical is giving off a constant pesticide vapor. So again, it's something else that in a small enclosed area is going to help you get control over these flies if sanitation is not possible. However, you don't want to breathe it at all. So you never want, you know, again, follow the label on the product that you're purchasing. But for that particular one, you want to make sure that you're not going to be in there often and breathing it in, and nor are the people who live in your building as they discard their trash if it's that kind of an environment where they personally are entering the room and then would be breathing the pesticide vapor. So it just depends on the setup, you know. Mm-hmm. So those strips are great for many circumstances and also not appropriate for other circumstances. And you could try something like fly lights or air movement. Many small flies, just having air moving around can help. It's not going to solve it, but having some fans down there even could be a solution.
Tim, does that help?
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate
it. Bob now in Madison with a question. Bob, what's on your mind?
Great show. Good guest. And I have a question. You know, as humans, we've been living with insects for, you know, thousands of years. And I'm just wondering, are there any insects that are actually beneficial to our yards or our homes? I'm thinking of spiders who eat small insects. And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, I mean, that kind of gets even, maybe that's kind of a philosophical question. You know, it's really this cycle of life where there are many different bugs that become a food source for different bugs that become a food source for different reptiles or mammals. And it kind of all works together. It's ordered to all work by design in a way that ends up feeding everybody. You know, insects can have a good effect upon plant life. Insects can have a negative impact on plant life, but other insects might eat those insects that are having the negative impact. So it's really an intricate web, pardon me, of complexity where everything works in tandem and in this, you know, symbiotic, multifaceted relationship with one another. And it ends up making this world that we live in. That's pretty awesome. Some days I do wonder, well, why are there mosquitoes everywhere? But, you know, the reality, even with a bug like that, is, you know, it's a food source for swallows and it's a food source for bats and other things like that. So it does, you know, it's awesome if you sit back one day and just commit some thought to it. Like, what a wonderful world we live in. It's really awesome.
We're exploring methods of pest control with Jeff Bourne, treasurer of the State Pest Control Association, getting at your infestations and what you wonder about in terms of indoor and outdoor pest control around the perimeter of your home, 800-642-1234. Diane is with us in Hubbleton. Diane, what's going on?
Well, I live in a very old farmhouse with a stone foundation, and for 3, 4, 5 years, I have had garter snakes in my house, in my living room, in my bathroom, probably from January until about now. We've cleaned up around the foundation. I'm pretty sure it's always a mama getting in the root cellar basement, giving birth whenever they do that, and then some of them find their way upstairs. My husband has taken to putting a heat lamp in the basement to attract them there so he can remove them without all my screaming and carrying on.
It sounds like
he keep them in the basement and out of my living room and bedroom.
They do want to know what's going on TV, and it sounds like, though, Jeff, they owe some back-owed rent, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I tip my hat to you. You are a tough cookie. I think that if that was my house, my wife would be talking to me about selling at this point, you know, because that's a difficult problem, and that could certainly be unsettling. I don't think anyone would be comfortable having the idea of snakes slithering around in their house. And with it being an older structure, it's probably, and not always, but I would just spend, you know, an inordinate amount of time investigating the foundation and seeing if you can find any entry points. And maybe that's even frustrating to hear because maybe you've done that already. But I would, you know, that's the first place to start always, is look again. The issue is you could find is there could be subterranean entry points. You're talking about a structure that's older, and even everything that you see above the ground level might be sealed up properly. But since snakes can go into a hole in the ground, there could be a hole that goes into your foundation somewhere that we can't even see from above the grade area. So it might be, you know, taking an extra look outside and seeing if you find holes in the ground, and that would lead you to think that it could be a snake hole, and making sure that the foundation is tidied up everywhere and sealed up everywhere. And if you're finding the holes close to the house and you see that the foundation is sealed up tight, taking a look in the basement and see if there's anything you can do from the interior of that structure that would keep them out. You know, it's probably not worth digging around your house to find holes in the foundation beneath the grade, but it, you know, all these steps, you just want to keep going in order, in order, in order. You can talk about or think about reducing the snake's food source outside. So maybe getting into some rodent control, maybe getting into some bug control, just so that you're eliminating the things right at your house that are attracting the snakes to your house in the first place. You know, so doing some of that. And then again, environment modification. Don't make it a place where the snakes have hiding spots. Don't have hostas real close to the foundation of your house where they feel protected and out of sight, making sure that, again, there's a barrier of open, fresh air and air movement and sightline there. And then there are like products, you know, and you don't want to use these if the snakes are already there, but there are, you know, like snake away products that you can buy. I believe that they are mostly sulfur. So it's like a granule type product that you sprinkle around the areas that you want to keep the snakes away from. So all those things, you know, just kind of going through the checklist and one by one, implementing them all, and hopefully something will turn up that will help you, you know, see where they are and how they're getting in and preventing them from being attracted again.
What about that heat lamp in the basement? Is that good hospitality, or should you just turn the lamp off? Is it helping?
It sounds very nice. You know, I haven't ever actually seen a study on that before, so okay. I wouldn't want to give like an uneducated opinion. We've had turtles in my home, and I do know aww. That you know, those types of animals can love those heat lamps and anything that generates heat. So that, I mean, that does make sense to me. However, I don't know if that would be, you know, efficacious enough where it would actually be drawing them from one area to that specific area. However, it's possible that it would. So it's worth a shot. So
all right,
something to try.
Jeff Bourne with us, treasurer of the Wisconsin Pest Control Association. We'll pick this up right after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're on to the nuisance critters in our living spaces. The ants, the spiders, the fruit flies. It's pest control here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So here's a watermelon pro tip. Just eat them outside. Outside, a couple drops of juice on the kitchen floor, and it is over. The ants know. So I follow the kids outside with the cutting board. We carve them up. We eat them outdoors. Makes cleanup easier, too. Join in with your pest control tips, your tricks, 800-642-1234. Jeff Bourne owns a pest control business in Waukesha, serves on the Wisconsin Pest Control Association with us for the hour. Let's go to Mike now in Milwaukee. Mike, hi.
Hi there. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, yes.
Okay. I just wanted to relate to an experience. I live in a 1960s small high-rise building, and about 2 years ago I had ants. And I'd never had an ant problem. I'd never had a bug problem there at all. And I bought these baits, ant baits, in an orange box. And I used them, and I put them out. And I just want to say they took a while to work. They worked fine, but probably took a few weeks at least until the ants started going away, and then they went away entirely, and I haven't seen them in 2 years. But a lot of those baits, that's my experience, they don't work right away. You got to give them some time.
Be patient is what Mike has learned here. Jeff, is that the case?
Yeah, for sure. Mike, actually, what the baits that you're using and all treatments for an ant is designed to operate slowly. And the reason for that is the method of attack that we're using against an ant is using their behavior against them. So what you have is the worker ants are the ones that you were experiencing in your apartment, and somewhere there's the actual nest site located. So the idea with any sort of ant treatment is not to get rid of these worker ants, but to actually use the worker ants to get rid of the entire nest. So whether it's a liquid application or a bait that they're physically taking, it's designed to act slowly. So the idea is we want enough of these worker ants, who are the ones that you see primarily, taking either the liquid chemical as they walk over it or the pieces of bait that they're actually grabbing. They're going to take those actually back to the heart of the nest and then spread them around and share them with their friends. And that's really what does the damage. So anytime even when you're hiring a professional company to perform an ant treatment, where you're really looking at a 2 to 3 week window before you're going to see the results from that treatment. And that does not mean that it's not working or that it's not working properly. That means that it's working exactly the way it was intended to, which is to use their behavior against them. It's one of the good things about dealing with a social insect that communicates with one another is we actually have that opportunity to use their behavior. So we don't even need to find the nest site in many instances. We can just use the workers to do the heavy lifting for us.
Mike brings up baits. What about if you have pets around the home or small children? How should you think about these baits?
Oh, yeah. You know, in general, the baits are going to be considered more of a safe method of attack than, you know, using a liquid chemical. But just like with a liquid chemical, the baits, you just want to be careful where and how you're applying them. I'm sure that the ones that Mike was referring to that he purchased over the counter probably came in a container. So it's, you know, oftentimes like maybe a a popular brand is the Taro bait. So it's in a small plastic rectangular shaped bait container, I believe is the most common form that you'll find in a box store. And it's just being careful where you're setting that. So maybe a good place is, because we know that the ants are often in the kitchen, behind the refrigerator or behind the stove, somewhere where the kids and the pets aren't going to have access to it. So it's always putting a lot of thought, you know, even when you are doing something that's a little bit safer, like a bait placement, making sure that the places you're placing it is going to be out of the access of non-target organisms, such as your dog, your cat, your child.
Mike, thanks so much for calling in. Jody now is with us from Brooklyn, Wisconsin. Jody, hi. What's going on with you?
Good morning. My problem is chiggers. And it was in a first-year garden last year. And they apparently loved me because I fought with them all summer. I do believe they came from the garden. I know there's recommendation of treating your yard. This is a rural property. It's really too big to treat that way. We also have two dogs, and I am desperate not to go through this again.
Mm. What would you suggest, Jeff?
Calling someone who knows more about chiggers than me would be the right place to start. And I apologize. It's just not something that I have dealt with. I've been doing this since 2005, and I have never had an instance of something like that. And, you know, I would want to verify, you know, you're using the term chiggers. Is that actually what it is? It sounds like it's something that I would call a company in who's had experience with that specific pest before, so that they could verify, you know, what exactly is this organism we're talking about? And then what are the options for either getting rid of them or making it less likely that they come? Is there something that can be done with your soil? Are there things in the area that are attracting them in the first place? And unfortunately, like I said, I just don't have a handy, you know, memory of dealing with them myself. So I couldn't give you any good tips.
I think of them as those little biting mites that, you know, that actually bite your skin when you're out, you know, working in the yard. And I wonder that they just somehow, I guess, Jody, just came in with you. Is that it?
They bite. You don't feel the bites, but the bite lasts for several weeks. And, okay. And for me, not my husband so bad, but for me, it was terrible itching.
Hmm. All right. Well, Jody, thank you so much for the question and the call. Good luck with it. You know, when you, Jeff, if you have an animal or, you know, kids running in and out of the house, and they're bound to bring in these critters with them, or even if you do a lot of gardening, what are some things you would suggest in order to not bring in some insects?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And as soon as the weather gets nice in Wisconsin is wonderful to be outside in. I love it here. And I love, you know, this time of year, it's just so enjoyable. And we want to spend as much time outdoors as we can. And my family, we take advantage of every opportunity we can. And by doing that, you certainly are opening yourself up to, you know, any kind of small bug that could be out there if you're rolling around in your lawn. Plus, you have to think about ticks and mosquitoes. So there are just a variety of pests that live outdoors. And a lot of it just has to do with educating yourself and knowing the areas you're going to. It's good to re-educate yourself on what are the preventative things I should be doing for myself and my family about ticks if I'm going to take a walk in the woods. You know, that would be a very important one. And understanding how mosquitoes work and why they're attracted to your area. Are there things that you can do to just keep them out? So, you know, if it's your yard again, there's lots of things that you have control of in your yard that you can do. But if you're talking about going to a public park or, you know, a hike somewhere else or going swimming in a lake or a pond, you know, then you don't actually have control over that area. And the best thing you can be doing is educating yourself on the different pests that could be in a pond or a lake or in a woods. And then how can I do a good job of protecting myself and my family?
If you're just joining us, we're talking about pest control. Our guy, Jeff Bourne, treasurer of the State Pest Control Association, fielding your questions and wondering about what's going on with your infestations that you've been trying to figure out. 800-642-1234. Sherry in Poinette, you're wondering about Asian beetles. Is that right?
Yes. Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead with your question.
Okay, we have a place up in Cornucopia, and when we went up last weekend to open up the house, we were surprised that there was so many Asian beetles still living in the house. And I'm just wondering if you could give us some more natural way of trying to get rid of them without some, you know, chemical.
Thank you, Sherry. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Sherry. And I just want to confirm, when you're saying Asian beetle, you're talking about the one that looks similar to what we would think of when we think of ladybug. Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, maybe she's not there. Oh, okay.
Yes, she
okay,
is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, for sure. So this is a nuisance pest. And it was actually, I believe the story is that it was brought to America on purpose because they feed on things that were damaging some farm crops in our country. So we introduce these on purpose to our environment, but they're not naturally from America, to help with something. But then they became a different problem for the people of this country, where they're like a nuisance. So their behavior pattern is to be out and about and feeding and breeding during the summer. And then they are one of the pests that tries to invade structures once fall arrives. So there's probably four of these fall pests: stink bugs, Asian lady beetles, brown marmorated stink bugs, and cluster flies that end up landing on buildings and on our homes in the fall. And they bask on the warm walls of the structures in the sun. And then as the temperature cools, either as it's turning to nightfall or as the season gradually shifts from early spring or early fall to late fall and winter, then they want to squeeze in wherever they can inside of a building to spend the winter in this kind of dormant state. And again, waiting for the spring. So what you're finding now is bugs that made it in to the place that you have in Cornucopia in the fall, and they've overwintered there, and now they're waking up and they want to go back outside and breed. So the non-chemical things that you can do is primarily starting making sure that your place is sealed up tight. So, you know, it's amazing how this is like a half-domed shaped pest, and they seem very bulky and big, but they seem to be able to squeeze in through just about any little crack that you have around. So it's making sure screens are intact, making sure that window frames and door frames that have adequate caulk, looking at where the siding meets the foundation, making sure that that seal is good. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that your home or business or other structure is just sealed up as tight as you can get it, and screens are intact so that these bugs can't get in the first place. And then after that, you might want to think about doing some sort of targeted treatment in the fall around those areas, the joints in the siding, around the window frames, around the door frames, so that if they do land on the outside of your structure, that they are going to succumb to that pesticide and don't have the opportunity to get indoors. And if you're in the Cornucopia in the fall when that's happening, you can try a non-chemical mean of getting rid of them as well, like soapy water a lot of people use for box elder bugs. So you could try that as well with those. You just have to remember that that's going to have to be, you're going to have to look at the outside of your house day after day for a week or two as they're landing and wash them off that way.
Will they eventually make their way outdoors this summer, or do you think that Sherry will see them for the duration?
Oh, yeah. So that's like kind of the frustrating part is it's a bug and it isn't a particularly, you know, intelligent organism. It's just designed to do what it does. So a lot of them are going to make it outside, and that's where they want to go. They're not going to find what they want indoors, but a lot of them are just going to, you know, wander the wrong way, and that's going to be staying inside your house, and they'll end up just dying of natural causes indoors because they're not going to find their food source. They're not going to breed and reproduce, but that timeline might, you know, take a little bit. And obviously if you're staying there in the interim, you're, you know, that nuisance is going to be part of your life.
Sherry, thanks so much for the call. Jeff Bourne, helping us manage pesky insects in our living spaces, represents the Wisconsin Pest Control Association. Well, still time to talk, and we'll be back in a minute with Jeff Bourne answering your questions here on the Ideas Network. Let's get back to your questions on summer indoor pest control here on the Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We've got advice from a Wisconsin pest control expert, Jeff Bourne, here with us for about 9 more minutes. And Jeff, I'm sorry to say, we couldn't keep the mice out of this conversation any longer. Ann in Madison is going to lead us off on mice. Ann, go ahead. What are you encountering?
I am encountering potential carpenter ants in our house, and we've tried to self-identify them, and it looks like there's 2 large black ants, and it could be carpenter or a benign ant. And I'm just wondering if there's a way we can try to bait them and get rid of them. You know, what are we up against here?
All right.
Our carpenter ant.
And thank you. And actually, we have 2 Anns in Madison. The other Ann, just be patient on mice. First of all, go ahead with Jeff identifying carpenter ants.
Yeah, identification is very helpful with ant control, especially for carpenter ants, just simply because you want to know for sure if it is a carpenter ant, because that is a species that could be doing some sort of damage to your house. But don't think of it like, don't panic. It's not like a termite where it's going to cause quick and heavy damage, but it is definitely something that you want to address. And it is one of those ant type species where it might be wise to call a professional in to help you with the problem. But that being said, you know, identifying is key. And then remember, a carpenter ant, they want to build these galleries in some sort of softened wood. So the wood would be soft for a couple different reasons. It could just be due to age. It could be due to water damage. It could be due to the fact that it's dead and decaying. So you want to put some thought into your local environment right there. Have you had a roof leak recently where there could be some damaged or soft wood? Are there pipes sweating, or have you had a leaky pipe? Looking at those areas where it's close to pipelines where we know that there's water and we know that pipes sweat, and examining the wood in those areas. Look for signs of tunneling bugs in those areas. Oftentimes, if you have carpenter ants, you'll see what they call frass, which is going to look like a sawdust material. So you could check on the floor in your basement for signs of frass, and that might lead you to a spot where the carpenter ants are. So you want to find where the carpenter ants are potentially doing some damage, if they are, just so that you're aware of that, and then find where the nest is, and then use some sort of product to get rid of them. So it could be that they're just up and about and they are living somewhere in your yard. I would go out, and the way that I would do it is by starting to look at piles of leaves in the yard. I would look at the different tree trunks in your yard. A lot of times you'll see carpenter ants going up and down the tree trunk, and carpenter ants can also be nocturnal. So, you know, don't hesitate to grab a flashlight and go out at night too. And look at all the tree trunks, and you'll oftentimes see them going up and down and up and down. You're like, whoa, I didn't know that I had a problem, but there's probably a carpenter nest in a tree somewhere. And then the simple thing that you could do is go buy some over-the-counter bait product at Menards or Home Depot or Ace Hardware. You know, they're all going to carry those types of things right now. And a lot of times it's going to be like a small granule that you could shake around the base of the tree or shake around the foundation of your house. But when it is potentially carpenter ants, you know, you do want to put some thought into making sure that they're not already establishing a nest somewhere in wood in your house where they could potentially do damage. And again, you know, just to reiterate, because they're one of those bugs that can do damage, that might be the one where you want to, you know, don't take too long trying to do it yourself before calling someone in, just to make sure that you're protecting your home.
Be a bit more assertive there. Anne, thank you so much. Now going to another Anne in Madison on the mice situation. Anne, go ahead. Hi, Ann. Can you hear us? And we cannot hear Ann in Madison. How about Alice in Duluth? You think you have mice. Alice, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
We have an odd problem. We didn't have any mice for a long time. And just the last couple of weeks, we've had these tiny, tiny little mice. I think they're voles. And what do we do, and what shouldn't we have done to get them?
Can you explain a little bit more where you're seeing them?
Late at night, and we're not seeing them in the kitchen. We're seeing them in our dining room table. In the morning when we get up, there'll be little turds on our placemats.
Hmm. What might be going on, Jeff?
You know, that mice, they consider that a communal pest, meaning that they eat among us. And if they're on the placemat on your dining room table, they are literally eating among you. And that's unfortunate. So it sounds like it's an issue. It's, you know, if I were to hazard a guess, I would be assuming at that point that maybe they've been there longer than you've been aware. And it doesn't rise to that level of where it's capturing your attention until you're finding the drop rings in more of a conspicuous location, like the top of a dining room table, you know. So it's very possible that it has been going on longer than you're aware of. So you think about that as you're trying to determine how to fix the problem. And, you know, making sure that it is the type of rodent that you think it is also going to be important. While it's possible that voles are in your house, I believe that maybe that's what she thought it might be. That's going to be less likely than a house mouse or a deer mouse, or what else they might also call a white-footed mouse. So I would spend some time trying to capture one with a trap or some sort of device so that you can make sure exactly what type of species it is. And then that will give you more information about, you know, how to get rid of them. So it's not that it's impossible that a vole or voles are in your house. It's just not as likely as it being, you know, the typical house mice, deer mice, white-footed mice type rodent situation. And then with any type of rodent situation, you want to do two things in tandem with each other. You want to somehow get rid of the rodents that are already in the structure, and then it's going to be, again, sealing up the outside of the structure to prevent them from getting in the first place. And with mice or rodents, typically it's going to be some form of a trap or some form of poison, or using both of those indoors. The phrase "build a better mousetrap and you'll be a rich person" is because just the old school wooden snap trap with some bait on it is the perfect trap. You know, it is wonderful and still is the most effective way of getting rodents out today, using peanut butter as a lure or something else that's very pungent that they can smell. Mice are so odor oriented. So bacon, some people, you know, chocolate, or if you have a peanut allergy, maybe Cheese Whiz or something like that. So traps on the inside, poison is another option on the inside. Sticky traps can be used, but remember that mice travel around with their whiskers in front of their face, and if they feel sticky substance, oftentimes an adult mouse will go around or jump over that sticky substance. So you don't want to rely on sticky traps alone, but maybe do them in tandem with a snap trap. But then again, remember that the best thing you can do is keep your home sealed up. So then it's just taking that time, going outside with a mirror, evaluating the foundation, looking for anything. You know, you're just talking about the diameter of a Bic pen is something that a small rodent can squeeze through. So it's not a big area. And it's just taking time and meticulously going around the foundation of your property and looking for how they're getting it in the first place. And then there's also, you know, habitat modification, environmental modification around your property that you can do. Again, you know, keeping the grass cut short, keeping leaves picked up, keeping plant coverage away from the foundation of the house. So it just is, again, right where your house is located, making that an area that's not comfortable for a bug or a small mammal to live, so that the farther away from your house that they start, the less likely it is that they're going to be attracted to the inside of your house.
We only have a few seconds left, but are we more inclined to see them come in during the winter months than summer?
You know, what I always think is that in the summer is when the population is going to be the highest. So you just are going to have more rodents outside. So that makes it likely that you're going to have rodents in the summer because the population level is greater because there's food and the condition outside is conducive for them to be thriving. So there's just more of them. But then the fall, when the temperatures do start to cool, is where, the body surface compared to their density is so off kilter that they lose heat rapidly. And it's just this fight, you know, this fight for survival as soon as the temperatures fall, that's when the push is for them to get indoors because they lose the body temperature so rapidly that it's really life or death for them. So those are the two things. Just remembering the population's so high in the summertime, and then in the fall when the temperatures drop, it really is survival and they need to get away in.
Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you. It was a great time.
Jeff Boren, treasurer of the Wisconsin Pest Control Association, owns Boren Pest Solutions in Waukesha. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.